a result of the outbreak, your city or entire region may be endangered by a lethal agent. If conditions at your location make this a possibility, you need to consider staying in place until the threat has subsided or blown over.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Viral Load Podcast, your disease podcast for a disease world. As always, I'm Andy Pupa.
I'm Brett Bales.
And we are chilling in the semi-quarantine. How are you doing up there, Brett?
I'm sheltering firmly in place. Although, unlike our American compadres and compatriots, It is some kind of holiday weekend, I've been told, and I sure did notice it. There were lines, and it looked like business back to kind of usual, I guess.
Yeah. Yep. Same around here. I finally snuck out the door and tried to go for a trail run today up on Baldy, and every single parking lot was taken. So I took a back trail that nobody was on, and I saw one person. One family did try to get close to me, but I mom-handed them, and I was like, stay back! And you and your demon spawn of a child that probably has every bacteria, stay back over there. And then I promptly gave them directions of the best trail so that they could relax.
Okay.
But, you know.
Well, I was going to say, like, I do that stuff anyway, regardless of pandemic or non-pandemic.
Yeah, you put your hand on a child's chest when he tries to get close to you. You're like, listen here.
Why did you call it a mom hand?
Yeah.
I didn't know that there was a word for it.
Well, you know how, like, when you're driving and all of a sudden you have to, like, hit the brakes really hard because somebody does something stupid and you, like instinctually put your hand across, like, the passenger? So the mom hands, you know.
Oh, like I thought that was that like little grab bar and like.
Oh, the oh shit bar.
Would grab for it. And oh shit bar. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I will. When you're driving, a lot of times I think it's a courtesy or it's just a reflex because I'm weird. I always throw my arm as if I'm going to be able to stop that person from like ejecting from the vehicle or I'm going to save them. I always put my arm out. So they don't like hit but it doesn't make any sense because they have a seatbelt on. So, I mean, you know, Brett,
and I've never once grabbed for that thing.
Never.
That shit bar. So
you're just going to let it go. If it ever happens, you're just like, what? If it's my day, it's my day. That's how you take that.
If it's going to happen, I'm going to go for a distance record. I'm going to see if I can just like, Superman, I'm going to go out flying. Yeah.
Oh man. Well, that's fun.
So speaking of all that and no shit handlebars and whatnot, if you're listening in sequential order, which I don't know,
maybe
what
you
percentage
are.
Of our I don't know what our marketing department is telling us what our listeners are doing, but
yeah,
if you listen to our last couple episodes, we did a deep dive into the 1918 Spanish influenza pandemic on account of it's interesting and it's drawing a lot of comparisons to the COVID stuff that we're living through. But that was a deep dive, even though, you know, to be honest, we could have done many, 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 many episodes on that.
Yeah, I mean.
But it was, you know, for what it was, you know, a deep dive, two of our longer episodes. So we're going to, you know, kind of follow that up with a little, Andy, you call it a palate cleanser.
Just a little palate cleanser.
Yeah, one of our little mini episodes we call Viral Particles. That's kind of a cute name, and it's punny, and it's fun. And we're going to, you know, each share a story that we liked or that we learned from the week. And this is our disease-ridden minisode.
Yeah.
So Andy's got a story that's real sweet and saccharine and full of hope and cheer and goodwill towards men. So I thought I would go first and offer a little bit of darkness because you can't have the light without the dark. And if it was just the sweetness, I don't know. I feel like we'd all get diabetes. So.
Yeah, yeah. We've gotten some requests for some positive stuff before, we keep following it up with death. Today we're gonna do a little bit of both. We do this sometimes on the minisodes where one of us will take one side and one will take the other, and try to kind of make a little different things. Basically, on these episodes, Brett will take something that makes him smile and makes him laugh or he thinks is interesting and he'll take that, and then I will take something completely different or sometimes in the same realm, but today opposite end of the spectrum, his yang to my yang, and so let's jump in. So what is yours about? I have not looked at this at all.
So let me tell you about what made me smile this week. What made me smile this week was I'm reading a book called Quackery, A Brief History of the Worst Ways to Cure Everything by Lydia Kang, MD, and Nate Peterson. Really entertaining, fun read. And, you know, a perfect kind of antidote to your sweet story. So I wanted to share a few little tidbits, a little bite size look into cannibalism and corpse medicine.
Oh, I guess see what you did there. That's pretty yes. That's pretty subtle.
Mm-hmm. So my story comes from the exciting world of medical quackery. So this is this really entertaining look back at all of the kind of just snake oil salesmen and all the just weird ways and, you know, non-scientific approaches that people have taken over the years towards, you know, curing disease. And, you know, this isn't totally out of left field, because we have been talking about like modern day quackery in terms of the, you know, coronavirus pandemic, just stuff in the news like bleach and, you know, God knows what. And even just pseudoscience or stuff that hasn't been proven, you know, taking chloroquine to you know, prevent the disease and all that kind of stuff. So this has been going on for, you know, as long as people have been aware of diseases, basically.
Yeah. Somebody's going to try to capitalize on whatever's going on. There's always those people, you know.
And, you know, it's also a nod to one of our earlier episodes on Kuru.
Kuru?
The cannibalism episode. So go check that out if you haven't listen to that, or if you need a little break from COVID and wanted to, you know, learn about some of the other horrible ways that you can become diseased and die. So that's one of them. Yeah. So there were a bunch of good stories on cannibalism and corpse medicine in here. Cannibalism, aka corpse medicine, aka anthropophagy.
Okay, which means eating of people.
I think so. All kind of different iterations of the same idea of using the human flesh and body to cure or, you know, to some extent make better, I guess. So this was chock full of tidbits on real vampires, gladiator juice.
Ooh, that does not sound good. That sounds derogatory in every way you could take it. No matter what angle you give on that, there's nothing that we can say on this podcast. Yeah, we just can't. We try to make this an educational podcast, so we're just gonna take gladiator juice right as it is. You put in your own reflections as to what that is.
It's funny enough as it's like on its own, but yeah, I definitely like have some jokes just screaming to like escape from my mouth right now, but I'm not.
Yeah.
Okay. Blood marmalade, skull moss, and mummy remedies. So I'm gonna go into two that I thought were interesting.
Blood moss
and. Whew. You know, basically what this chapter was about using human body parts to treat disease and the long history of that, going back all the way to ancient Greece and Rome. So the goal of, you know, this kind of medicine is to restore health, vitality, youth, and strength by, you know, basically harvesting, body parts. And you can't really, you know, like grind up skull and do this kind of stuff with the person alive. So it involves dead bodies. So what one of the common kind of threads with all of this is that it involves like using criminals like bodies. So criminals that met an early death were prized because it was thought that corpses held vitality, so like their life force lingers in the blood and flesh longer if the death was violent. So okay. This is why like often you see like criminals that have just been executed, like their bodies get used for this kind of medicine, because it's thought that like there was some kind of, I guess, extra zesty like life
zesty,
force.
Just a little, it's just like normal cannibalism, but a little spicy.
Yeah.
It's good, but it's just, you know, a little spicy. All I can think of, have you seen the movie District 9? The alien movie?
Yeah.
And there's the boss leader who's like, I'm going to eat your arm. I'm going to eat that arm, and then I will have your strength. Like, that's all I think of when, like, for this kind of stuff. Like, is that it's still, that, like, what people think. Like, oh, they can ingest something and become that thing. That's, letting a spider bite you and thinking you're going to become Spider-Man. You're probably just going to die from whatever that recluse is or whatever.
Well,
like
yeah, exactly.
A dangerous spider, but okay.
So it's not just any old corpse will do. It's, you know, the deaths from a violent kind of means are preferred. And I've heard this with, like, hauntings and stuff too, right? Like, you're, like, places are more likely to be haunted if the, like, the person died, like, a violent death or something like that. So
okay.
I guess it's more, like, kind of space-time energy or
yeah,
whatever the
that's
hell.
A solid sales pitch. And it also might spread some light on what gladiator juice is, because blood from a gladiator could just be gladiator juice. So
I God, I'm really okay. I just can't. Okay.
So all right. So now we've got violent criminals. They're dying, and we're eating mm-hmm. them. So
here's an example of like how these violent criminals would be put to use after they were executed. So this story comes from the 1700s, when executions were a public spectacle. Prisoners would be driven to the gallows, ropes tied around their necks from a common high beam. And then basically the cart was just yanked out from under them, and the prisons would swing and jerk in the breeze until they were lifeless corpses.
I love how they added swing in the breeze as if there was yeah. like something delightful out of that.
Yeah, that's, I should say, go back, quote, swing and jerk in the breeze until they were lifeless corpses, end quote. So that's Lydia King, MD. So following one of these particular events, so we have a visual, right? Like, you know, all the bad guys get kind of carted up, like literally on a cart, and the noose goes around, they slap the horse on the ass and have it, you know, gallop
yeah, yeah.
away, and they dangle there, right?
Okay.
Bada bing, bada boom.
Hanged.
And all in front of, you know, the townsfolk. So
of
following
course.
One of these events, it was documented, I don't know why they gave the month, like it matters, like April 1758. Like, does it change the story if it's February 1758?
Yeah, I don't understand. They just really wanted it to be vivid. They're like, it was a nice,
sure,
crisp April
the...
day, and they yeah. were swinging and jerking in the breeze.
Yeah.
Like, I don't
know. It was a beautiful April day. And this is a report courtesy of the Gentleman's Magazine. So speaking of...
Speaking of gladiator juice.
Speaking of gladiator. Okay, we're going to go there. So, quote, a child about 9 months old was put into the hands of the executioner, who 9 times, with one of the hands of each of the dead bodies, stroked the child over the face.
You know, that's not going to end well. That kid doesn't know what happened, but there's going to be a deep sadness in their bones
yeah.
forever, and they have no idea why.
Yeah, like poets will be writing of this child's face years to come.
And
just,
that child was Edgar Allan Poe.
Yeah, just pools of sorrow instead of where the eyes were. There were just pools of sorrow. So
oh,
basically, this kid had Wens, W-E-N-S. I don't know what that is, but apparently it's like some kind of condition where boils and like a skin problem, right? So the thinking was that this would basically be a cure for this kid's Wens disease if they basically just went up right after all the executions and just rubbed all the swinging, dangling criminal bodies over the kid's face.
Okay.
Did not, I guess, read, I haven't finished the book, but I didn't read if it was effective or not.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll do a follow-up.
So chicken pox plus stroking dead bodies on your face equals cure. Got it.
Mm-hmm. So one of the just ways that, you know, the condemned would be utilized, I guess, you know, it's, you know, don't let them go to waste. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Speaking of not letting go to waste, going to talk about eating now humans for health in this story called Pity the Gingers.
Okay.
Okay.
Gingers haven't had it bad enough.
No. God, I don't have any ginger jokes on top of my head.
Oh man,
but,
I just have a bunch for my friend who's a ginger comedian, and it would just be awful taste.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and gingers might be a pretty significant kind of.
Yeah, they're only like 2% of the population, but they could be like 30% of our listeners.
Yeah,
so
let's not shoot ourselves in the foot.
Yeah, we're not going to do that. So gingers, we stand with you.
So this is also around the same time, the 17th century, recipe for red-headed cadavers.
Okay.
And this is a quote straight from quackery. Quote, choose the carcass of a red man, whole, clear, without blemish, of the age of 24 years, that hath been hanged, broke upon a wheel, or thrust through. Once you have procured the flesh, chop it to bits, sprinkle it with herbs like myrrh.
Oh, is that myrrh? Myrrh. Like frankincense and myrrh? This is biblical.
Oh.
Okay.
Ooh. And aloe. Ooh. Mash it with wine. Let dry cure in a shady spot. And then, you know, use it to treat wounds, among other things. And they were frustratingly vague about that. Literally, like, this red-headed ginger recipe for, like, consuming the body of a red-headed cadaver to treat wounds and, quote, other things.
Well,
so
that's not extremely helpful.
So that's, you know, just one of the examples of how kind of specific this would get. So I don't know. They didn't say whether that was a criminal or not. Maybe they're just implying that. There you go. And finally, the last little story I thought I'd share, the legend of the honeyed man.
Okay. Yeah.
All of these.
So much innuendo in this episode.
So much. God. Anyway, so this was a rumored Arabian practice of mummifying a human with honey to then use basically as a kind of, I guess, medicinal treatment.
And then there were bears everywhere. Nobody talks about this ever again. Yeah. It's where Winnie the Pooh came from, actually. People don't. Mm-hmm. That's why The Tao of Pooh is a book because of this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh,
you know?
Okay. So the catch with this one is that the body had to come from a volunteer. Like, without a sacrifice, this wouldn't work, apparently. Like, the juju wouldn't be up to snuff, I guess.
So somebody would just volunteer to be mummified with honey while alive.
Well,
they were just like, candy me, baby. Like, what was this? Like, how does this?
Don't worry. I'm going to go into it. Don't worry. So the volunteer, usually an elderly person, which I guess at the time would have been like a 34-year-old, would basically eat nothing but honey for days. Basically, I guess, knew that their time was coming or was told that their time was coming and would just totally switch to an all-honey diet, which, doesn't sound too bad. But this does. Because they would have to eat honey until, quote, their sweat became honey, their urine became honey, their excrement became honey. So, you know, they basically turned into a big thing of honey, right? So after dying, because, you know, honey shits, the body would be entombed in a coffin filled with, guess what they filled it with?
Honey.
Honey!
God.
And then for all of you instant gratification types, sorry, you have to actually let this one age for 100 years exactly, and then you're ready to enjoy piece by piece. Didn't say what this actually treats, but
this seems like somebody just wanted like a sweet way to consume people. Like this, like there's nothing that, like, the saying what this is for. Just literally, hey, you know, if you have a body. Let's honey it. It's going to be for the next generation. It's not even for you. It's for three. I mean, you think about it, like, again, like 34, 35 year old. So this is for four generations in the future.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. It sounds like just a board, like Arabian prince, just, like, you know, hey, you just start eating honey until it, like, comes out of your pores. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a brief little foray into the, I guess, pun-filled world of
quackery
medicine.
Yeah.
In quackery. So more of that to come for sure. But
yeah, definitely.
Just, you know, provide a little antidote to the lightness that you're about to high beam onto our our ears.
Yeah.
So
I mean, I'm definitely gonna have to pick up that book, Quackery, now. That's phenomenal. Mm-hmm. I've picked up a bunch of really good books while doing this, so I feel like I'm getting smarter somehow. So this story is a little lighter. I mean, those are fun, but this story comes all the way from Sudan. So this is about a Sudanese refugee. So there is a question that's often asked of Sudanese refugee survivor, and forgive me if I'm saying this wrong, but it's Manyang Reith, and I don't know if it's Kerr or Kerr.
Kerr?
I think it's Kerr. It's K-H-E-R. It threw me off because I know Khmer is like not spelt that way at all. Like it's Khmer, so I don't know if this is similar. But either way, people,
dude,
you
know,
it's going to be Khmer for the rest of the way through.
Cool.
So he had pretty rough upbringing, and so he's often asked at this point in his life, how do you find strength to keep going when everything seems bleak? How do you stop thinking, what did I do to deserve this? So some background on that was that basically Khmer was a young boy and he was living on his own at a very young age in a refugee camp in Ethiopia because there was a civil war in Sudan. So basically everybody was killing each other and he needed to get out of there pronto. So his parents separated with him and he found himself in Ethiopia. Once he got there, he was bitten on the arm by a snake. So he's got it kind of rough. So first taken from his parents, then gets to Ethiopia, and then is bitten by a snake. So at this point, he was determined. He was called a lost boy, which not Peter Pan-esque. I guess it's a term that they used to explain the 20,000 displaced orphans due to Sudan's civil war in the 1980s, which claimed the lives of 2.5 million people. So as we say on this podcast, not good, not great.
Hot take.
Hot take. But once bitten by the snake, he became very ill, and the other lost boys couldn't really help him. They kind of just put him in his tent and threw a blanket over him, as one tends to do. So
this is not the Lost Boys starring Corey Feldman, the 1980s horror comedy of young vampires.
Kiefer Sutherland crushes it, I got to say. You know, phenomenal. Corey Feldman, Corey Haim also do pretty good.
I'm a Stand By Me guy.
Me too. Me too. Yeah, but, you know, hey, the Frog Brothers did all right. So he stated it felt like somebody was pouring boiling water on his arm until it got hotter every minute. So eventually volunteers brought him to the UN hospital where he was so sick he thought he was sure he was going to die. I promise this is going to get lighthearted. So
yeah, you're making me look like a bundle of sunshine and rainbows over here.
Yeah, so he stated a lot of kids die at this camp. I guess this is my time. Because he was malnourished at the camp, it took almost 6 months to recover. He continued to repeat to himself, like, I didn't kill anyone. Why am I being punished? And he said at his lowest point, he remembered his parents and began to hear their voices saying that they were coming for him. So he started to try to get a little more positive. He said that that gave him hope and the strength to fight to stay alive. He began repeating a local term he had heard to himself that stated, the rain will stop and eventually you will see the sunlight. So Khmer survived. He made it through all of that, which was pretty awesome. The fact that he was pretty much on death's doorstep. And now lives in Richmond, Virginia, and he sells coffee from a coffee company that he made that benefits refugees like himself. So you might be asking yourself, like, oh, what happened to his parents? Good question. So over the next 20 years, he wrote over 200 letters to refugees from all over Sudan. And so in 2012, he was finally reunited with his mother, who still lives in Sudan with his sisters. Unfortunately, his father was killed while fighting for Southern Sudan in those same civil wars in 1996. So, so Khmer basically, like this, by the way, this is an interview with Goats and Soda. So NPR, kudos. Yeah. Basically he just wanted to get the message out that in these times of COVID-19, Khmer wants people to know there will be times in life when you feel like you have no power, but just like the rain, it will pass. So, this guy survived all that stuff. I mean, there's many other like stories like this. I've shared on the pod that I went to the Museum of Tolerance in LA, where a guy gives an amazing speech. I wish I could remember his name right now, of like surviving the camps and Holocaust. But basically, just saying like it's gonna get better. Like right now, people are freaking out. People are upset. There's people who are actually like fighting, you know, COVID-19 and dealing with all that stuff. And his message really is just simple. Like it does get better. Like despite all this being awful, like, you know, you could be bit by a snake and in a hospital where nobody's helping you out and you can survive. So,
there's actually a really good documentary about this called The Lost Boys of Sudan. That I'm now remembering, is a thing. And if you want to learn more about it, it's really interesting. It's intense because it deals with the kind of quagmire of civil war that's kind of gripped that part of sub-Saharan Africa. But it's interesting, and it's cool to hear like a lost boy of Sudan, like COVID kind of story of hope. Because yeah, a lot of them have gone on, like I've actually seen at conferences, like global health conferences, like have gone on to do speaking and things like that for this reason, for like hope and whatnot.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it makes sense. Like, I mean, they've been through some of the worst things you could possibly live through, whether it's like watching that kind of a civil war happen. Because this isn't, I mean, you think about it, like, especially in some of these areas, it's not civil war the way we think of civil war. You know, this is like Hotel Rwanda style stuff that's going on there sometimes. And so, and as much as we're reeling from COVID right now, it could be a lot worse, and it will get better. So
yeah,
that was
I mean, well, this stuff is brutal. So it's but we're not going to go into that, because this is the light part.
This was the light part. I know somehow. You know what? I think it is.
Why did that get flipped? The yin yang, the colors flipped there.
Yeah. So you know, it's
probably you're making my corpse medicine just sound cheerful.
Yeah, your corpse medicine was cheerful in retrospect.
It was kind of cheerful.
So
yeah.
I mean, you know, we always have gladiator juice to hold on to, you know?
Well, you know, Atlas Obscura did refer to quackery as, quote, delightful, disturbing, and delightfully disturbing. So there you go.
Awesome. But, well, that's...
Hey.
You know,
this was a good palate cleanser. I feel like my...
Yeah, I feel
my
good.
Brain is ready to learn more now.
Yeah, and as always, everybody, by the way, thank you so much. We got another review. We got another good review. Nobody, you didn't write anything. You just gave us a positive review, which we appreciate. But again, as always, if you like what you heard, please like, rate, and subscribe over at Apple Podcasts. That helps us get our words into your ears and others. Mm-hmm. And make sure you go over to our social medias, where it is Viral Load Podcast on all social media, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. We post that stuff every single week, every time we put out an episode. Also, if you have any ideas or comments or anything you want to tell us, you want to tell me that care is actually Kamai, or something ridiculous that I said wrong, or that you think Brett is the smartest man alive, go ahead and send us an email over at viralloadpod@gmail.com.
Are there other uses for gingers besides,
mincing
wound
them.
Treatment. Yeah.
Exactly. I love how you, like, we were trying to tread softly on this ginger topic the entire time, and at the end you're like, are there any uses for gingers?
Well, you know, I have relatives, and you know, I think I have ginger blood flowing.
I definitely do. I have a few red hairs in my beard whenever I grow it out. My brother's a ginger. My sister's a ginger. You know, I'm one step away from, if this was a Kevin Bacon, like 6 degrees from Kevin Bacon or 7 degrees from Kevin Bacon, I am 1 degree from Kevin Bacon. That's what I'm trying to tell
you. So we're in a good position to say that, yes, in fact, that they do fog a mirror. They do have a soul.
Yep.
And
that's it.
So that's good.
All right. Well, this has been a ton of fun. As always, I've been Andy Pupa.
I'm Brett Bales.
And goodbye.
Goodbye. Ooh, that was good.